Peace to everyone. Welcome to Nia2X Radio, the voice of the people. So glad to have you here this Friday evening here in Washington, D.C. Cloudy as all outdoors. We had a little rain today, but not much. A very hot summer here in 2020, a year we won't ever forget, no time soon. 2020, not only in D.C., but all over the planet. But I wish you and your family well. And here on Nia2X Radio, we have a great program planned for you tonight. And our sponsors are from VLD Productions. They are sponsoring this portion of the program along with author Booker ML. She's also sponsoring this portion of the program. And we have a fantastic guest here to share some fantastic news for you and for I. Now, you know, not too long ago, sometime this year, in fact, we had a program on Nia2X Radio, and we had two guests. And one of those guests is here tonight, and that's our buddy, our friend, Joe Perez. He was here on Nia2X Radio a couple months ago with another friend, a colleague, and that is Mike Brown. And they were here giving us the 411 about a lawsuit. And this lawsuit was and is still against the Prince George's County Police Department. Now, when we go back to the year 2020, we are talking about one heck of a year for sure. There's been so much that has happened, and we're only in late July. Tomorrow's August the 1st, and here police are just out of control all over the country. Now, we're not condemning, of course, every police officer. That would be foolish, but we are speaking of police officers that should be condemned and those that wear the badge and abuse the authority in the badge. That's who we are aiming at, and that's who we were aiming at then. And we'll be talking a little bit more about it tonight, because tonight is the big update from that previous show. Now, that show on Nia2X Radio was July 23rd. Could have been July 23rd. That show, in fact, was March the 19th, 2020. And on March 19th, 2020, as said, that show is titled Lawsuit is Crowding In on Prince George's County Police Department. And so to talk about it tonight, we have one of those guests as mentioned, and that is Joe Perez. Joe Perez is the president of the Hispanic National Law Enforcement Association, and that's a national organization he heads, he started, he runs, and they are really leading the charge in helping we the citizens and helping police officers within the department get it right, get it straight, so that we can be proud of our police officers and that they can be comfortable in doing their jobs. Without further delay, Joe, welcome to the program and thank you for coming again.
Nia, thank you. It's an honor to be here on your show once again, and I really appreciate it.
The honor is all of ours. You've been working so hard in the lane of, basically in the lane of doing right, in the lane of straightening out serious problems. It takes a special person to dedicate themselves when all of us see the wrong, but all of us just don't have the fortitude to get in the lane you're in to make it right. Could you please bring the listeners up to par? What has taken place, but a little history of the lawsuit that was put against Prince George's County Police Department. Why a lawsuit, and who brought the lawsuit, and et cetera.
Okay. Yes. In December of 2018, the Hispanic National Law Enforcement Association, as well as the United Black Police Officers Association, along with our lawyers, ACLU of Maryland, Washington Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and Urban Affairs, and Arnold and Porter brought forward this racial discrimination retaliation lawsuit, federal lawsuit. And it was against the Prince George's County Police, and it alleged widespread racism and retaliation against officers who would witness racial disparities against either other officers or people in our community. And, you know, we gave examples of text messages and emails and, you know, a bunch of documents showing where citizen complaints were not being taken seriously. And so that lawsuit is still ongoing. And currently we're in the deposition phase, you know, where we get sworn statements from both sides. And just recently we had a major update. And that update is we were able to get an expert report to review all of the information that the Prince George's County Police Department provided to us during discovery. And this expert, who is a well-known expert from California, the L.A. Sheriff's Department, he's also an expert that the DOJ calls on to look at police departments and reform. So he looked at the information we gathered from the Prince George's County Police Department, which included emails, it included documents like investigative files of police officers. It also included promotion information. It included discipline information, like the amount of officers fired, you know. So he took all of this information and put together a report. And that report showed widespread disparities in all of those areas that I just talked about. And even more recently, we on July 23rd, we submitted a letter to a task force that the county executive, Angela Olsobrooks, put together to look at police reform. So we put a letter together with 12 recommendations on how to repair the Prince George's County Police Department.
And wow.
I think all of that, in a nutshell, is the very latest and from start to finish.
I mean, you know, you make it, like you brought us from the history to the current. Can you explain to us, you know, the challenging emotional impact? You go into a police department to work and, again, to honor your badge, your job, and to serve the community. And yet you ran into, as you explained, widespread racism. And I would assume if you brought the racism to the attention of your superiors, as you are supposed to do, you would expect that the superiors would take care of what was reported once it's proved that without a shadow it is true. But instead of getting the help you expected, you also mentioned there was retaliation. How did that, you know, when after you for an example, brought up an incident that should have been squashed, that should have been handled, and the expectation that it was going to be handled. But instead, this retaliation appeared. Please explain that to us, because I'm sure there are police officers across the country that some of them don't know how to deal with that. It takes a very special character to be able to handle something so unexpected, which would be retaliation, when you're doing the right thing. So with you telling us, it is to help another officer maintain the courage you obviously have to come forward, and then with you, you're still moving forward. But let's help out some of those that want to do what you're doing. The retaliation, please break it down for us. What did you feel like when this came out of left field, for sure?
Yeah, well, it's definitely a significant emotional event, because you know when you're trying to work and you're trying to do the right thing, and you're trying to, as a police officer, if you see something wrong, you're supposed to say something. You're supposed to do something. So you're doing everything that they told you in the beginning you were supposed to do, but then you get penalized for it, and that becomes very, stressful. And, it affects everything that you do. It affects your sleep, your health, your immune system starts to go down. It gets weaker than it normally is because of all the stress that you're facing on a daily basis. And, on top of that, the police department, you have, that blue wall of silence that they call it, where you're not supposed to, in their terms, rat out another officer, And what happens is, because of this blue wall of silence, these officers take it upon themselves to also retaliate against you, So you have the leadership all the way as high as the chief retaliating against you, and then your peers retaliating against you as well. So it's difficult, and it's a difficult thing to do, but it's a necessary thing to do, because we're here. When I was hired to be a law enforcement officer, a police officer, it was to protect the community. It wasn't to protect somebody who's doing wrongdoing, regardless of whether they're my peers or not. So, I think it's a necessary thing, and I think that, it's unfortunate that, it has to be, a very tragic incident like George Floyd to happen for people now to kind of see things differently, So I think right now is a perfect time for reform. And, if you see something as an officer, say something, do something, because now you have a little more support. Now people are seeing how widespread these problems are.
And they are certainly widespread all over the country, probably different parts of the world, but certainly in this country. And for those hearing this interview in years to come, the George Floyd incident is when a police officer, Caucasian, put his knee on the neck of Mr. George Floyd, and kept his knee pressed into his neck so hard for 8 minutes, 48 seconds, Mr. George Floyd died in front of the world, and it set off the protest that we are seeing today. And that happened in, I think, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and people are just outraged. We're leading up to a national march by Reverend Al Sharpton and the National Action Network, in conjunction with Martin Luther King III, called the Commitment March. And it's the Commitment March, Get Your Knee Off Our Necks. We are speaking with our guest, Joe Perez. And Joe Perez is a fighter. He is a fighter for the good. And he's describing to us a lawsuit that has its ups, but it has its downs, of course, but it also has its triumphs as well as profound challenges. As he mentioned, the toll it takes on a human being to do the right thing. You would think it wouldn't take such a toll, but it actually does. Mr. Perez, widespread racism. Please give us some examples of what was going on in the department, because as mentioned, this is a public lawsuit. But bring it right to us. What are some of the allegations, or I don't know if they're still in the form of allegations, but what are some of the racist acts that took place and you witnessed, please?
Some of the acts that that occurred were, for example, you had a Hispanic detective who responded to a call where a person basically left the gun unattended. And, you know, after talking to this person and getting all the information and dealing with the situation, him and his supervisor, a white sergeant, had a text message exchange about the person that left their gun unattended, who was an African American. And pretty much the sergeant was arguing with this officer over text messages that you should have locked this Nika up, you know, using the N-word. And this officer confronted the sergeant via text message, you know. It took the sergeant, you know, I don't remember exactly how many minutes to respond to the text message after that, after he said, well, what do you mean by Nika? You know, it took him like 17 minutes later before he finally came back with an answer. But they later had a phone conversation, and this white sergeant says, you know, this guy is a black guy that lives in Cheverly. He's got to be a criminal. You should have locked him up. So that's the mindset of some of these people, and the supervisor no less. So this officer reported that to myself and the president of the Black Police Officers Association, Thomas Boone. We arranged a meeting with the chief. We brought the text messages there. We explained the situation. We brought him some other racial incidents as well. And 3 or 4 days later, the officer that complained on the white sergeant was transferred out of a detective position and, you know, to back to patrol. And, you know, patrol is where you start, you know. So it's a penalty for reporting a racist act, you know. And eventually, you know, myself and now Lieutenant Boone, the president of the Black Police Officers, you know, we met with the chief over various racial incidents that were similar to that, things that were being done to people in the community. And what he did was he started targeting us personally, you know, with retaliation, with transfers, with investigations, you know, you name it. And pretty much what he was doing was he was sending a message to the rest of the department that, you know, if you report racism, if you report discrimination, if you report police misconduct or brutality, we're going to make an example of you, you know. And
that was the hidden but apparent message that was sent for standing up and doing what you should have done. What should have happened? What is the right response that should have happened when it was reported that a sergeant who is in a supervisory position using the language, derogatory language, racial derogatory language, and it was reported that he did and talked about where people lived, and because they lived in a certain area, that means they're guilty. How should that have been handled in the right way?
Well, the first thing should have been, you know, we should have been thanking this officer for coming forward and reporting the incident. We should have been celebrating that. And then the sergeant should have been immediately investigated, you know, and dealt with swiftly, you know. You know, I think everyone deserves due process, so he should have been investigated and then disciplined appropriately. And, you know, when on the police department, they have general orders, and the penalty for using any type of racial language is what they call a Category 4 offense, which is fireable. You know, you could get terminated. He should have got the full extent of you know, what he did wrong, you know, and that didn't happen in this case. He actually eventually went to a more prestigious position, you know, after the incident. So he
after the offense.
Promotion.
And in due time, he actually received a promotion. We're speaking with our guest of what went on in the Prince George's Police Department when our guest was an officer himself there, standing up, doing his duty not only for the community, but also doing his duty for the officers that he worked with. Our guest, Joe Perez, president of the Hispanic National Law Enforcement Association, and he said he also works with the Black Police Officers Association headed by Lieutenant Boone. And they're right here in Prince George's County, Maryland. We're going to come back after a break, you know, because if these things are going on within the department, that there's a culture, if you will, of racism that prevails in and for Caucasian officers, then how does that affect the community that they serve here in Prince George's County, Maryland? I don't know the numbers, but the ratio, you have a lot of brothers and sisters that live here. You have a lot of brother Hispanic brothers and sisters that live here as well. And then you have this mindset from police officers that are supposed to serve and protect. And we want to find out from our guest after this quick break of what happens or what he wants to share with us, the mindset going out in the community doing their job. I'm sure we can, you know, say what happened, but let's talk reality. Let's actually find out what is happening with the Prince George's Police Department and the mindset that is being described. This portion of our program, of course, again, is brought by Booker M.L. You know, Booker M.L. is one of my favorite authors of today. Her eye-opening advice to everyone is, quote, "It's not about me." I'm sorry. Quote, "It's not about dying. It's about living and preserving your memory," unquote. Her must-read book is titled, "It's Not About Me, It's About Them." Listen, every family and person should get her book for not only themselves, but even as gifts because it's a complete guide, step to step, to be prepared when the inevitable time, death, touches any one of us. Her book guides the readers. It relaxes the readers, and the advice is priceless on what to do when that time comes for you or a family member, because you'd be so shocked how unprepared we are. And it'll help our grieving process to be a little more easier when we have things lined up. Her book is only $15. It's only 30 pages with powerful information. That's Booker ML. Check out her website, and it is wrappedinone.com. Now that's wrapped with a W, WRAPPED dash N dash the number one.com, wrappedinone.com. Check out that book. It is really one, again, to guide us, and it makes you think, wow, about the price of this, what is the law for that, when that time comes for maybe a member in your family and mostly for yourselves, so that others don't have so much to look up and try to find out a passcode to your phone or whatever. Booker ML is not about me. It's about them. Thank you, Booker ML. Back in the studio with Joe Perez, president of the Hispanic National Law Enforcement Association. And he and others have been leading the charge to bring real justice to the citizens and the police department in Prince George's County, Maryland. And if you're just tuning in, there's a mindset that is being shaken up. It has to leave. It has to really disappear, because this mindset is charged with racial, not just tones, but racial behavior within the police department. So once a police officer gets into his or her cruiser and began to patrol the neighborhood, what can you tell us about the spillover, if you will, of that particular mindset, and is it included in the current lawsuit?
Well, you know, and this is my opinion of what I've seen while I was in the police department. You know, there's a handful of officers. First of all, let me just backtrack just a little bit. You know, one of the basic questions that you're asked when you're looking for a job as a police officer is, why do you want to be a police officer? And I can guarantee you that every single person, when they first apply for the police department, they say something along the lines of, I want to help the community. That's always the answer, some variation of that. You know, but what I see in reality is you have a handful of officers that they got this mindset like they're there to discipline and enforce things on the community as opposed to working with the community, you know. And
yeah.
I've always been bothered by the fact that I've been on a call for service where, you know, maybe someone's car was stolen or something like that, and you show up to the scene, and that other officer, you know, gets out the car like he's pissed off that you called him. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's his job. What happened to that phrase that you said in the beginning, to help my community, you know? And so I see that quite too often, you know, like, if for some reason when someone is calling for help, it's like a bother to you, you know, and we need to get away from hiring people like that. You know, we need to you know, like I told you earlier, we submitted 12 recommendations, and one of those recommendations were to hire people from the community, you know, from Prince George's County first. You know, we want people that are reflective of the community, people that understand the community, people who are not going to, like, overreact, you know, with a person in the community. Just because, for example, you know, we hired you from Pennsylvania before where you might have had, you know, maybe one black family, you know, within, you know, 50 miles or, you know, even one Hispanic family within 50 miles. So you don't know how to deal with minorities, you know. Then you bring them to an area where, you know, it's a majority minority county, and everything you do as a citizen or everything you say is a threat to them. They feel threatened. They're scared. You know what I'm saying? So we need to, you know, we need to rebuild from the beginning. You know, we have to go way back, you know, starting with not even the hiring process. We got to start even before that. You know, there's programs in the community, like the one that I can think of immediately is there's Mr. William Taylor, who founded this this nonprofit association. It's called Public Safety Training in the Schools, and it's a Prince George's County-based organization. And really, the nutshell is, you know how they have in the high schools, they have ROTC that prepares you for the military. Well, this is a public safety program that he's trying to get into the school system to prepare you to be a police officer, a firefighter, a EMS worker, or maybe a 911 operator. So he's trying to get that into the schools, so that we could start teaching kids from a young age about, you know, the law enforcement and public safety profession. That way we're getting them right from the community, and we're grooming them. We're helping people, you know, the kids stay out of trouble by being active. You know, I think that's like a wonderful program.
It sounds wonderful.
Yeah, that's where you start. You start with the kids, you know, you know, like I said, his program, I could talk for hours just about his program, but he prepares you to do that particular job, whether it's a firefighter, whether it's a police officer, you know, he prepares you for all that and helps you get all the certifications. And by the time that you're 21, you can go right into, you know, like the Prince George's County Police Department, and you know, you went to a Prince George's County school, you know, you probably live in the county. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. It's an excellent idea. And as you stated, it's one of the 12 recommendations that has come out of this lawsuit, which is aiming to do and correct the problems of the community within the police department, and offering, as you just eloquently described, Mr. Taylor is part of his program, and I'm agreeing wholeheartedly, because this lawsuit has been going on for quite a number of years. What is the financial attachment that the county is paying to defend what is going on in the department? And if they weren't defending, then they could fund the program that you just told us about with Mr. Taylor. How much has the county paid, if you know, in defending the practices going on allegedly in PG County, because you haven't come to the trial yet?
No, we have not. We're almost finished with discovery, and it'll be, you know, sometime in mid-August. And as of April 30th, Angela Alsobrooks has spent $6.3 million tax.
No.
No.
Six.
It's worth.
Good grief. I mean, that is real money. Now, let's break this down. That figure, you said $6.3 million has been spent from the taxpayers in Prince George's County, Maryland, to defend this public lawsuit that everyone, not only the residents in PG County, Maryland, should read online, but $6.3 million is going into protecting the alleged atrocious behaviors when it could be spent. We want to hear some more recommendations, but is that what you're telling us? $6.3 million has been spent when it could have been spent in a much more productive way?
Yes, and to kind of sum it up and give you a better picture, that was the figure, the official figure, as of April 30th. All right. So right now, because we're doing depositions and that costs more money, we're estimating that by mid August, she would have spent $10 million. $10 million that could have been put back into community programs and services to help people, you know?
And absolutely.
That's what makes it worse.
It's outrageous. I don't understand why people that are making these decisions can't just correct these problems. Because I've read part of that lawsuit. It's atrocious. When you spoke that some of the things that were going on in the department that people can read, I understand there is a redacted piece of material that obviously the precinct doesn't want us to read. But, again, it was actual emails going on in the department. And Joe Perez mentioned information about promotions, information about discipline. Let's break down discipline for an example. In this redacted piece of material that we all want to be unredacted, give us some examples of disciplinary action. If a Hispanic, Black, Caucasian officer had similar offenses, and you were there, you know how the discrepancies took place.
Yeah, well, I could tell you almost exactly because of the expert report. They took all of those case files, and they came out with the statistics. And pretty much it boiled down to this. If a minority did something wrong compared to their white counterparts, they were two times as likely to actually be investigated than their white counterparts and disciplined. And then the numbers get even worse where if you were a minority, you were three times as likely as your white counterpart to get fired, you know? And there's also a portion in there that shows I want to say it was like 24 separate cases where the department ignored charges against white officers, didn't even investigate, didn't do anything. So the numbers are even worse than that because you can't count investigations that don't exist. You know, they were being swept under the rug, you know, and this is the thing that this county executive also, Brooks, is defending and spending taxpayer money defending.
That's awful, you know, because this is a big waste. Back to the one of the 12 recommendations of going into the schools, empowering children to be prepared to come out of high school and walk into honorable occupations from the programs. You know, the residents of Prince George's County Maryland really need to read this information. Is there any way we can help in the lawsuit, the community, petitions? I really want to read the report unredacted, you know, so that we can literally see and read what literally happened on a daily basis, a weekly, monthly, annual basis within the police department that we, the citizens, pay our taxes for. This is not what we are paying taxes for, to defend that type of conduct. It should have been, you know, it should have been dealt with years ago. I don't understand why the defense, I don't appreciate the defense, and I don't respect the defense of protecting the atrocious and unthinkable behavior of a racist in a powerful position. And some of the other allegations I've heard, we haven't spoke about. It has to be something that the community can do. Can we do anything to help you, your lawyers, and where you are right now?
Well, I mean, I guess the biggest thing that the community could do right now is contact County Executive Angela Alsobrooks, and, you know, all of her information is online, and email address and everything is there. And, you know, demand that she give the authority to unredact this report. You know, this is a document that's public. The public is entitled to know, you know, who these officers are that are conducting this bad behavior, because there's no reason that any of them should be dealing with our communities. We don't need people.
Brother, you got a fan on? I'm sorry. You got a fan on?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm picking up something, but hoping you didn't lose your point.
No. So you know, I'm sorry, and I kind of did.
I don't want to miss a word. I'm hearing like some air or something. But, I mean, the bottom line is to unredact the report. Can you explain to the audience what is a redacted report? Because right now a report has been done. Where did this report come from? And it is redacted. What does that mean? And who conducted the report? Was it the gentleman from California?
Yes, it was. And we refer to it as the Michael Graham report, because that's his name, Michael Graham. And he was the second or third in charge of the L.A. Sheriff's Department. And I believe that's the largest sheriff's department in the entire country. And he's a well-known police practices expert. And he has a lot of experience working with the Department of Justice. So he conducted the report. And what happened was, the report is based on all of the information that Prince George's County provided to us by order of the court through the lawsuit. And what Prince George's County did was, they filed a motion to make those documents that they provided to us confidential so that the public cannot see it in the report. So the redacted report is, you know, basically they're blacking out information, like if an officer used a racial name, they're blacking that out. They're blacking out the officer's name. And, you know, if we got a document where an officer has a history of brutality, like all of that information is blacked out. And I think there's one part in there that's really egregious. You know, you had the commander. This is a commander in charge of internal affairs who's entrusted to do fair and impartial investigations, calling people via email, you know, some type of racial names, referring, you know, to them in a racial way, like, you know, and it was a white person referring to minorities with words that no person should ever use, any person, you know, and all of that is redacted. And these people still work there. They're still in positions of authority, you know. So if I'm one of these, if I'm one of these commanders, and you as a community member come to me, you know, I'm the same person calling people all kinds of racial names behind the scenes, and here you come to complain about one of my officers. What do you think I'm going to do?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm already biased, you know, I'm not going to give your complaint, you know, the seriousness that it deserves, you know, and that's exactly what's going on. So all of that information is redacted, and, you know, the county executive could easily say, okay, unredact the entire report, and the community would know exactly what you're dealing with, you know. And I think it's important, you know, I think it's important, if you think about this just for a quick second, when you get pulled over by a police officer, by the time he pulls you over, he runs your tag, your license plate, he knows your name, he knows your criminal history, he knows everything before he approaches your car, okay, because of the computers that we have nowadays. But an officer pulls you over, you have no idea whether this guy has a history of brutality or racism or discrimination. You're at a disadvantage not knowing what you're dealing with. So
absolutely,
that is why it's important that that information get unredacted.
Very well put. And the points you are making, I want to go back to the county executive. As you explained, with the stroke of a pen, she could have the report unredacted. Just like that, she has that power.
Yes.
She has that authority.
Yes. She was the one that had them to redact it, to make it confidential.
Has she stated why she's not doing it? Why she hasn't done it?
She has been very silent on all of this, you know. And the only thing we could judge her on is her actions. Her action so far has been to defend the police chief when this all started, to spend $6.3 million plus, you know, to redact the information. So everything that she is showing us with her actions is that she is part of the system trying to cover for these people.
Oh, that is a horrible, horrible situation for the community, because we're talking about people of authority when you talk about commanders, county executives, and we're going to get to right after this last break another person of a position that is not in that position anymore because, again, under his watch as chief of police, we'll talk about him, give his name when we come back, and talk about the victories, even though there's so many challenges in doing what is right, but it's worth it. And we'll find out what the victory is when we come back after we say thank you to this particular sponsor. This sponsor is from VLB Productions. We'll be right back with our guest, Joe Perez, from the Hispanic National Law Enforcement Association, and he works very closely with Lieutenant Boone from the Black Police Officers Association right here in PG County, Maryland. They work to correct wrongdoing, not just in the community, but especially in the workforce, where if the mindset and culture of racism, white supremacy is destroyed, then the community, people, humanity has a better opportunity to live in a world where we do see police officers and we don't cringe or feel like, oh boy. But we can welcome them because we know they're there to serve us. And that is not the case today across the country. And we're not condemning every police officer. We salute those men and women who put on their badges and their uniforms and go out in the community and risk their lives to hold up the justice that they have sworn to uphold. So we honor and salute you, but we're talking about those that are doing anything but. So keep it right here. You're listening to NEA2X Radio, the voice of the people. We're found at blackonblackunity.com. Then simply click radio information. And making it all possible is the following superstar, Oscar award-winning actress and comedian Monique has recently won a major victory against Netflix. Monique stood her ground against Netflix alleging race and gender bias when she refused to agree to an unacceptable offer to do a comedy special in 2018. Monique argues that her resume and history of sellout comedy venues over the course of her career was not factored in and completely overlooked when Netflix offered her a substantially low payment to do a comedy special. Netflix's motion to dismiss Monique's claims of discrimination and retaliation were all denied by the court. So, the way to go, Monique, indeed, we remember that situation. In fact, Monique and her husband, Sydney, came right here to NEA2X Radio, the voice of the people, and gave us an exclusive interview that helped us to understand that particular situation from their perspective. You know, that brings us to you again, Joe. When you stood up, you know, the other officers that you worked with, did they support you? Did they see the same things? They saw the same things? They were hearing the same information, or they were hearing the same ugly statements? They were witnessing what you stood up and fought against. How was their behavior toward you? Was it like a pat on the back? Hey, I got your back, man. You're doing the right thing. Or was it something else? And if it was, please explain to us how it was when you your comrades, your coworkers, other police officers, when they knew you were doing your job and doing it correct, what was their response to you? What was that like?
Well, that response was, you know, again, along racial lines. You know, of course, you had the white officers that, for the most part, were giving me dirty looks, you know, because I broke the blue wall of silence. And actually, there were a few white officers that were patting me on the back and, you know, behind the scenes saying, you know, keep it up, this is needed, you know. And I could say the same exact thing with the minority officers. A lot of them were pats in the back, but from behind the scenes. You know, thank you for doing this. You know, I couldn't do it. You know, they don't want to be involved publicly because, you know, because of the message that the chief of police sent by targeting each and every one of us that brought an issue forward. So, you know, they've, for the most part, been behind the scenes. More recently, you know, the minority officers are now standing up for issues, and partly because the chief of police stepped down as a result of this, because I guess he's the only one who knows why. But after we announced the expert report, a few hours later, he resigned.
He did resign. I was going to ask, was he fired? Did he retire? But he actually resigned.
He resigned effective immediately, just a couple of hours after our press conference.
And this press conference, was it talking about the redacted report?
Yes, it was. We were announcing the expert report with all of his findings.
You know, we have to see this report. I would encourage everyone to see this report or to help get the report unredacted so we can see what honestly went on. And our guest, Joe Perez, said that the report came forward, or the information on the report came forward from a court order. The court ordered the police department to forward information of records and all of the evidence that we can read to see how our tax dollars were being spent from officers, mostly in prestigious positions. And it's going on. I mean, we're up to $6 to $10 million. Just, you know, it's just, it has to be, it has to come to an end where this money can go to much needed things in Prince George's County, Maryland. Can you give us one or two more of the recommendations that you have put on the table to inspire and build up the community of Prince George's County, Maryland?
Just some of them real quickly is a residency requirement that the leaders of Prince George's County, the high-ranking officials, they live in the county. We want that to be a requirement. We want the regular street officer, if we want him to live in the county as well. It won't be mandatory right now, but you'll get an incentive to live in the county. We want people from the county who are invested, you know. One of the biggest recommendations is we want to adopt an officer bystander intervention. So basically, if you see your coworker, you know, choking someone or kneeling on their neck, that it requires you by law to intervene and stop it, you know? So, you know, those are some of our recommendations, you know, along with, you know, training. You know, training is always good, but, you know, you can't train the racism out of somebody, no matter.
Well, how do you get rid of that? How, you know, once, as you stated, some officers come on the force down here in the city, and they come in contact with people with different nationalities, as the DMV is, and they come with their own prejudices that they learn, I don't know, from TV, their parents, or what have you. How do you deal, how do you recommend in training?
I recommend that they find a whole different type of job. We don't need people like that. Go become a...
Because you can't even get it out of them.
That's right. You can't. You can't. You know, it would be one thing that if you could leave that racism at home or wherever else while you're working, but that's not the reality. The reality is if you can't deal with certain types of people, then you shouldn't do this job. Become a plumber, become a mechanic, you know, do something where, you know, just because you're a racist, you know, it ain't going to affect somebody's car, you know. We're talking about people's lives. We carry guns. We have the ability to take someone's life, you know, in a matter of seconds. And just because I'm scared and don't know how to deal with a particular type of person, you know, I'm putting everyone at risk.
Yeah, because there have been some horrible cases here in Prince George's County, Maryland, where mothers, families, are still fighting on behalf of their children, on behalf of themselves, allegedly from police officers, even some black police officers. I didn't get a chance to get into it because even some black police officers act like they have something to prove to keep danger, if you will, away from them, and they want to prove that they're just as tough, rough, mean, nasty, and can violate the human rights of the people that they are here to serve. So it's just a whole lot of training that just needs to be overturned and retrained so that people can learn to basically understand what the job of a police officer is. It is way out of control. And we give big props to Black Lives Matters who marched this year. Other groups, I may not know your names, but big props to all of you. The things that are going on in Portland, Oregon right now, where the president is sending unarmed officers. It's just so much chaos that's taking place right now. And among it all, our guest, Joe Perez, fighting the good fight, and it led to whatever it led to, we're happy that Hank Stawinski has resigned. We're very happy because this atrocious conduct took place under his watch. And if you can't handle the position and handle your officers, then hey, you did the right thing to resign. And that's one step, but it's a step that's taken a 1 million forward step. Because it was a slow time coming, but it came, and we're so happy, and we really congratulate you, as well as Lieutenant Boone, others behind the scene, other organizations, and our prayers as we continue to push forward toward God's justice. So we salute you, Joe Perez, your family, the sacrifices, the suffering, to stand your ground when you know you're doing right over wrong. You have the closing remarks, sir, at this time.
Well, thank you, and really the ones that I have to thank are, you know, all of these officers that did come forward, you know. On the lawsuit, we have, I believe it's 13 officers, you know, and I have to thank all of them for their bravery and sticking through it, you know, because it's tough. It's tough, and, you know, it affects a lot of people's lives, both in the police department and the community. You know? So I'm looking forward to, you know, working steady on getting change, you know. So that,
how can people reach you that want to help get that unredacted report and anything that they can do?
They can go to our website, and it's the initials are HNLEA.org. And, you know, you can contact me through the website. There's a phone number on the website. The lawsuit is on there. The redacted report is on there. And some other filings are on there. So all of the information that you might need is on there. And you can also contact us through the website.
Yes, sir. I want people to also know that, again, on August the 28th, fighting the same fight on a national level is our great leader, founder of the National Action Network, which Joe Perez is a member, and as well myself. Joe Perez sits on the Police Restructure Accountability Committee, fighting, and that march is found online at nationalactionnetwork.net. If you haven't registered, we encourage you to do so and keep up with the march. We're in the middle of COVID-19. It could go either way. Medical officials could alter. Or the mayor. This COVID-19 is not being ignored. Reverend Sharpton is talking about it. It's certainly not being ignored, and that's why it's good to go to the website every day, especially if you're planning on coming from out of town. So just keep your eyes and ears open. Get in contact with Joe Perez, and let's get that report unredacted. We can do it, pulling together. And on the national level, it's all about police reform, not just in your county or your sheriff, but all over the country. Let's continue to pull together and wear the shoes of Joe Perez and many, many, many others, the 13 others and others we don't even know about. And those shoes are the shoes of courage. Joe Perez, thanks for coming, and we got to have you come back and update us again.
Thank you, Nia. Thank you. Like I said in the beginning, I'm honored, and I thank you both for the Hispanic National Law Enforcement Association and the National Action Network Greater D.C. Chapter on behalf of the Police Restructure and Accountability Committee. Thank you.
All right, my brother. Thank you. God bless you and your family. Thank you to the listening audience and, of course, our sponsors. Without them, we wouldn't have a program. Remember, Dick Gregory said, don't have anger, fear, jealousy, or hate. All right. Stay peaceful, but keep fighting. Peace.